Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph by the two dots. Yesterday we discussed Beit Shammai's opinion with regards to a dinar. Now, Beit Hillel Omrim Bipruta. What is this Pruta that we're speaking about? Savar of Yosef the Meimar, Pruta Kolduhu. Pruta means anything, any coin, whatever is the smallest denomination at the time, that would suffice. So all we're looking for is something that is a minted coin, at the bottom of the ladder of value, but we're not looking for any particular value or absolute value. Amalei Abaye, Va'alaktani, didn't the Mishnah say, Kamehi Pruta, Echad Mishmona Bisari Talki? The fact that the Mishnah gives a value to the Pruta already indicates that it's not just the smallest coin available, but it has to have some reference, it has to have a value. And over here it's telling you that it's 1/8 of an Isari Dalki. It's just telling you what the value was at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah. Whatever is chashuv today, whatever is considered to be that small amount that equates to pruta, that would suffice. Rabbi Simai in his generation went ahead and measured the relative values of the Kamehi Pruta and the Isar. What's the relationship between a Pruta and Isar? Echad Mishmona Bisar Italki. And he also came out with it being 1 to 8, 8 Prutot in the Isar Italki. And that was, of course, not in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Chiyata Ravin, Amar Rabbi Dustai, Verabi Yanai, Verabi Oshaya, Shi'oru Kamave Pruta. They measured what the value of a Pruta was. Echad mishisha b'isari italki. 1/6 of an isari italki. So now we have seemingly a machloked about the value of a pruta, whether it is 1/8 of an isari italki or 1/6 of an isari italki. Amalei Rav Yosef, ihochi, haino detanina. If that's the case, now I understand what is written in the Midrash Halacha. Sei v'chshov. Go out and calculate. Kama prutot v'shnei slaim. How many prutot are there in two sela? Yoter me'alpayim, more than 2,000. Now the reference here is to a braita in Torat Kohanim that discusses the punishment or the that comes out of a small infraction. Over here we're talking about mi'ilah. When it comes to an asham mi'ilah, that's a korban that is brought when one misappropriates hekdesh. A person, when they misappropriate a pruta worth of hekdesh, has to bring an asham. The minimum value of that asham is shnei shekel hakodesh, is 2 shekalim or 2 shekel hakodesh. Shekel hakodesh is double the value of the shekel that was in effect at that time, or the equivalent of a sela. The Mishnah uses the term sela to equate with a shekel hakodesh. A sela in the time of the Mishnah was worth 2 shekel, but those were 2 shekel of the Medina. So shekel hakodesh is double the shekel that is available at their time. So now it says, if you take 2 sela, which is the equivalent of 2 shekel hakodesh, and you compare that relationship to a pruta, you will know that for a small infraction of violating, misappropriating hekdesh by pruta, you're now obligated to bring an asham that is worth 2 sela or 2 shekel hakodesh. So he says that it's more than 2,000 times the amount. Mar says, Hashta alpaim lo havyan. It doesn't even get to 2,000. Yeter me alpaim karila. You're telling us it's more than 2,000? Amar luhu ausava. There was an elderly gentleman there that says, Anatanina la. I learned that braita, or I know that braita. Karov la alpaim. It was near 2,000. Gemara says, sof sof. That's also not true. Alpha v'chamesh me'ava talatim mishita avin. The multiplier is 1,536, 1,536 times Hudavion. So a pruta is 1,536th of those 2 sela. So it says, Kevin denafkalahu mipalgo. Since it's more than halfway, meaning that you have 1,500, it's over the threshold of 1,500, karov la'alpayim karile. They call it close to 2,000. Now, the calculation that gets you to this number is pretty straightforward, which is that you have a dinar, which is the coin that we've been talking about, the silver coin that we talk about, the zuz, or the dinar, is the basic silver coin that we speak about. The dinar is equal to 24 isar. And each isar, as we saw here, has 8 prutot in it. So if a dinar has 24 isarim in it, and there are 8 prutot in every isar, 8 times 24 gets you 192. So you have 192 prutot to a dinar. Now, if you have 4 dinar in every sela, so that gets you 768. Or the other words, it's 4 times 200, which is 800, minus 4 times 8, which is 768. So 768 is each sela has 768 prutot. But here we have, it's 2 shkalei kodesh, or 2 sela. So 2 times 768 is 1536. So that is the calculation, how we have 1536 prutot inside of 2 sela. The point of the braita is simply, here for such a small infraction of using a prutah, hanav, a prutah of hekdesh, misappropriating it, you have to bring an asham, bekesef shkalim, and so you see how much or how great the punishment is for such small avera. One should take note of that, because if the avera is bigger, imagine what type of kapara you would need. And obviously the same in the reverse, which is for a small mitzvah or for a big mitzvah, we know that the positive is multiplicative versus the negative, and therefore the rewards will be great. So it's just an idea for people to conceptualize the amount of impact they have, even with small infractions, or if they're going to do bigger infractions, or if they do mitzvot, good, or even more good. Gufa. So now the Gemara wants to discuss this machloket here, seemingly between Rav Dimi and Ravin. Remember, Rav Dimi and Ravin are traveling between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, and they're bringing Memrot from Bavel back to Eretz Yisrael back to Bavel. Here we have a contradiction in their valuation of the Isar. One of them came back and says Pruta is 1/6 of an Isar, and the other comes back and says that a Pruta is 1/8 of an Isar. So, Kiat Rav Dimi Amar Shier Rav Yisimai Biduro Kamehi Pruta. So Rav Dimi brings back the version that it's Echad Mishmona B'Isar Italki. It's 1/8 of an Isar Italki. V'chiyata Ravin. And when Ravin came, Amar Shiru Rav Disayv Rav Yanayv Rav Oshaya. They all calculated what its value was. Kamehi Pruta Echad Mishisha B'Isar Italki. 1/6 of an Isar Italki. Amalei Abayi the Rav Dimi. So Abayi suggests to Rav Dimi, Nema At V'Ravin. Let us suggest that you and Ravin, Bipluto Dahani Tanae Kamiflagitu, that you are arguing this same Makloka Tanaim that we have. Titania, have a brighter. Pruta Shamru Chachamim, Echad Mishmona Isara Italki. It is 1/8 of an Isara Italki. Shesh Ma'a Kesef Dinar. And here is the calculation. A dinar, and this is what we discussed before, and now there's more detail about how they got these multipliers, which is that a dinar, which is the kesef, a silver dinar, has 6 ma'a inside of it. That goes back to yesterday's discussion. What was the smallest coin in Tzuri? Was the smallest coin a dinar kesef or a ma'a kesef? But a ma'a kesef, there are 6 ma'a inside of every dinar. A ma'a equals shnei pundiyonim, and a pundiyon equals shnei isarim. So here you have the math there that gets you the 24 times that we talked about before. Then isar is 24 isarim in every dinar. A dinar is 24 isarim because take the shesh ma'a kesef times the 2 pindion is 12 times the 2 isarim. That gets you to 24. Then starting from isar, the relationship between an isar and a pruta is isar shnei musmisim, masmes shnei kunt roknin, kunt rank shtei prutot. So there again, you have a multiplier of 8, which is every isar has 2 musmusim in it, which has 2 kun tronkin in it, which has 2 pruton in it, which basically makes it that it's 2 times 2 times 2, 2 to the third power, which is 8 times. So that's what we mentioned before. That's how we got to the number 192 times, which was every dinar contains 24 isar in it, and every isar has 8 prutot in it. And so here the relationship is, if I was to take a pruta, it'd be 1/8 of an isar. And that's similar to the position of Rav Dimi, who says that the relationship is 1/8 of an isar italki. Nimsa pruta achat mishmona b'isar italki. Shimon Gamliel omer, shlosha hadrasin lima'a. So he has a different coinage system, which is where a dinar equals 6 ma'a. But his ma'a divide into 3 hadrasin, and then shnei hinsin hadris. And for every hadris, there are 2 hinsin. Shnei Shminin Lehanetz. And then you have this other coin, the Shminin, that is two for every Netz. And Bei Prutot Lishamin. And there are two Prutot inside of every Shamin. Nimtza. From this you would end up Pruta Chat Mishisha Bisari Talki. Because there you would end up that it's 1/6 of Isari Talki. So if you do the math, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he doesn't have an Isar in his calculation. His calculation goes from a dinar down to a pruta, and the relationship is six ma'ah, then 3 hadrasim, which is 18, 2 hanzin is 2 times 18 is 36, then 2 shmanim, which is 2 times 36 is 72, and then 2 prutot is 144. 72 times 2 is 144. That means for him, every dinar contains within it 144 prutot. As to be differentiated from what we saw before in the Tanakama, that there are 192 prutot in every dinar. So it's clear here that they have, you know, different valuations of the dinar or the pruta, meaning that one thinks there are 144 prutot inside of the dinar, and the Tanakama believes there are 192 in a dinar. So now, how do you find out the relationship to an isar? We already established that every isar is 1/24 of a dinar. Every dinar contains within it 24 isarim. So if I take 192 divided by 24, which is the sheet of the Tanakama, I end up with 8. 8 times. And that's why a pruta is 1/8 of an isar italki. On the other hand, if I take the sheet of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and I take the 144 and I divide it by 24, the relationship of an isar to a dinar, then I end up with 144 divided by 24 is 6. And that's why, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, every pruta is 1/6 of an isar ha'italki. And that's how he gets the difference in the math. So, lema mar damar ketanakama. So, Abaye suggests to Rav Dimi, let us say you hold like the Tanakama, that the relationship is 1 to 8, based on the coinage that you laid, that was laid out here. Rav Avin damar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And Rabin holds like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that it's 1 to 6 based on the coinage system that he is using. Amalei, ben the Didi, ben the Rabin, whether according to me or Rabin, alibi the Tanakama. We both hold like the Tanakama. Truth is here that Rabbi Dimi explains it within the sheet of the Tanakama, but the same thing could be done within the sheet of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, just reversing their opinions about whether it appreciated or depreciated vis-a-vis the dinar. So now you have a problem. If you hold like the Tanakama, every pruta is 1/8 of isar. There are 24 isarim in a dinar, and there are 8 prutot in every isar. So if that's the case, then 1 to 8 is the relationship. How does Ravin ever come up with this 1 to 6 ratio? So lo kasha. Ha de ikur isurei, ha de zol isurei. It depends on the fluctuation of the isar. Ha de ikur isurei, when the isar appreciated, Kum esrim v'arba bezuza. At that point, there are 24 in every zuz. Zuz is a synonym for dinar or dinar kesef. That is the way that the Tanakama we saw described it, that there were 24 isarim in every dinar. But that's when the isar already was appreciated. Hadzol, when the isar depreciated, then kum tlatin v'trein bezuza. There were 32 isarim in every zuz in every dinar kesef. So it seems to be that the isar, which was one of the major coins that were used at that time, it was an actively used coin, that coin fluctuated in value. As opposed to the dinar kesef, which was stable and a fixed amount of silver, so that was considered to be something that didn't move in value. The isar that was minted by the kings, that fluctuated in value, probably depending on the metal content and size of the isar, it would fluctuate in value. So sometimes the isar was more valuable, it appreciated, and therefore there were only 24 in a dinar. Other times the isar depreciated, it was smaller or had less metal content. In that case, there were 32 isarim in every dinar. Why does that make a difference? Because now, remember, we know that there are 192 prutot inside of a dinar. So if you have 192 prutot inside of a dinar, depending what the value of the isar is, will depend on the relationship to the pruta. If the isar is 24 in every dinar, then you take the 192 divided by 24, and you get 8. And that's how you get that every isar has 8 prutot, or there's Pruta is 1/8 of Isar. On the other hand, if you think that the Isar depreciated, then there are 32 Isarim in every dinar. If I take 192 divided by 32, that gives me 6. And that means that there are only 6 Prutot in this lower valued Isar. And therefore, every Pruta is 1/6 of an Isar Italki. And that's what Rav Dimi and Ravin are bringing. The memorot that they're bringing is, depending on which time you measured it at, the Isar was of different value or fluctuated in value. And depending on which Isar you're looking at, sometimes a Pruta is 1/6 of an Isar, and sometimes it's 1/8 of Isar, depending on whether the Isar is appreciated or depreciated. So what's interesting, what has to be kept in mind here, is that the Gemara believes that every other coin has a static value. All the other coins, especially the dinar and the pruta, are static in their value, likely because of the metal content and size. In that a dinar was a standard and seems to be a much longer lasting coin that existed for a very long period of time that overlapped many kingdoms and kings or emperors. And therefore the dinar was considered to be like a base value. And so the dinar kesef and the pruta, which was the copper coin, the smallest coin, they had static values. And then one coin that fluctuates in value is the Isar, which seems to be that the Isar was the coin that was minted by the emperors, was the going coin, the one that changed over. As opposed to the Prutot and the Dinarim, which seemed to be they were much more stable currency, the Isar was the currency that changed with each king and with each emperor, and therefore it fluctuated in value relative to the Dinar and the Pruta. And that's what you're discussing over here. You're discussing about an Isar. Sometimes the Isar was more valuable or more appreciated, and therefore there were 24 in a dinar, which leads you to have the Pruta's relationship to it, that the Pruta's smaller. Pruta's only 1/8 of that Isar. On the other hand, sometimes the Isar depreciated, it was of a lower value, therefore there were 32 in every dinar, but that made it closer in value to the Pruta, and therefore every Pruta, there was 1/6 of that Isar. And that's how he explains the machloket between himself and Rabin. In their day, you have to remember that the metal content of the coin determined its store value. Meaning that today, when you talk about coinage and dollars, the countries left the metallic-based systems many years ago. When they went off the gold standard, it made it that no coin or no object was backed by a physical metal. And therefore, the coins and the bills then became an IOU of the government. I mean, it was on the good faith of the government to make whole on the currency. On the other hand, until that point in time, while they were on the gold standard, and prior to that, coinage or bills were backed by a physical value of metal. And so in their day, when you're talking about minted coins, the coins have metal content in them, and that metal content gave them intrinsic value, and that's how the value was determined. So when you're talking about fluctuations in coins, that could be both in size, that the Isar was a bigger Isar or a smaller Isar, as well as the metal content, meaning how pure was the silver inside of the coin, or how much silver content was there inside of the coin. And therefore, the intrinsic value was what determined the relationship of these coins. Amar Shmuel, Kitsha bitmara. If he marries a woman with a date, afilu omeid kur tmarim bidinar, even if you can get a kur's worth of tmarim, that's like 30 sa'ah for one dinar, which makes the price of every tamar, every date, de minimis, mikudashet. Nevertheless, she is married. Chashinan, what are we worried about? Shema shave pruta b'madai. Maybe a tamar, a date, is worth a pruta in madai. Madai, where they do not have dates, or dates are not readily available. So there, dates are much more expensive. So over here in Bavel, where dates are plentiful, a date isn't worth even a pruta. Nevertheless, if he engages this woman halachically with a tamar, we are choshesh for the fact that it might be worth a pruta somewhere else. And we have a Mishnah, Beit Hillel Omrim, Pruta, Ubishave Pruta. Beit Hillel says specifically, a Pruta, or something that is worth a Pruta. This Tamar is not worth a Pruta. Lokasha, Habe Kedushe Vadai, Habe Kedushe Sofek. That's not a problem. Our Mishnah is discussing, you want to know that you have Kiddushin Vadayin, you definitely may have Kiddushin over here. You give something that's worth a Pruta, or a Pruta itself. Then you have Kiddushin. I am speaking, or Shmuel is speaking about a case where Kiddushei Safek. We are worried about the fact that it might be worth a pruta somewhere else, and therefore she has Kiddushin. The nature of this chadashash is actually a machloket between the Rishonim over here, which is that the Ri and the Rosh believe that this is simply a chumra dirabanan. It's a chumra dirabanan that says, and that's what it means, chayshinan. We worry about the fact that it's worth a pruta somewhere else, because we're worried that maybe someone from Madai will see the Kiddushin and say, oh, there was a pruta involved here. Or if someone from Madai sees this and says, oh, there was no Kiddushin, and he'll go back home and use it tomorrow and say there is no Kiddushin. So we're worried about that type of overlap. And for that reason, we're choshesh midrabanan, that if this has value somewhere else, that makes it worth at least the pruta, we're choshesh for that Kiddushin midrabanan only. On the other hand, the Rambam and the Ran believe that this is a Kiddushin or a Safek midoraita. Because maybe the chashash, or what we're worried about, is that since it's worth a Sheve Pruta and Madai, our basic concept here is, Kiddushin Dorain, the Kevan Shehi Nitratzta Behen, since she accepted them, Bishavim Pruta Bezu Makom, and they're worth a Pruta in some place, it's as if she says, it's worth a pruta to me. So it's as if she's giving or implying that the value of this object is a pruta. So we have two factors here. One is her acceptance of this as the kiddushin. And number two is that it does have that value of a pruta somewhere else. The combination of the two make us now choshesh for the fact that it might be kiddushin d'oraita. Because she was, we'll call, sabra b'kabla. She accepted this as Kiddushin, and since it has value somewhere else of a pruta, maybe that's sufficient grounds to have her be married. So they believe, or they think, that the issue here is an issue d'oraita, not an issue d'rabanan. Obviously, that makes a big difference where we're talking about just a chashash d'rabanan, or a safek d'rabanan, versus a safek d'oraita. Now, according to that sheet of the Rambam, it seems that if you knew for sure it was worth a shevet pruta in this other location, that they would be married vadai. And that's why many of the commentaries on the Rambam conclude that if you know about it and you know for sure it's worth a shevet pruta somewhere else, then they are married. Ramban disagrees with that point and says, despite the fact that the chashash is like what the Rambam and the Ran say, that the chashash is for the fact that it might be valuable or worth a pruta over there, and we are uncertain as to whether we go by the locale which we're in, or anywhere in the world where it's worth a pruta, but it's still a safek, inherent safek, and even if we knew for sure that it's worth a pruta somewhere else, they still wouldn't be married. The same safek would exist, because we just don't know what the determinant locale is, whether it's the location in which the Kiddushin was presented, or anywhere in the world where it's possibly worth a shevet pruta. So he sees the safek as being more fundamental than many of the other explanations that are given in the Rambam. The other nafkamina, which is something that we mentioned before, which is that according to the shita of the Rambam, that we are choshesh midoraita about the fact that it could be worth a shevet pruta somewhere else, that only would apply to things that could last until you got to Madai. If it didn't last until you got to Madai, then there's nothing to speak about, because then it's not worth the pruta. Even though it's worth the pruta in Madai, you can't get it to Madai to be worth the pruta. Whereas for the Rosh and the Ri, who think that it's only a chashash midrabanan, whether the item could last or not is not really so relevant over here, because it's all a chashash midrabanan, and that would still exist even if the item had a shelf life to it. So those are the two nafkaminot between these two views or versions of what the chashash is over here. Number one, whether you need to have shelf life to get to that location, which according to the Rambam, yes, according to the Rosh, no. And the second thing is whether if you know for sure that the value is a pruta somewhere else, according to the Rambam, that according to most Rishonim, with the exception of the Ramban, leads you to Kiddushim Vadai. Whereas for the Rosh, it would still be a Kiddushim Safek, because the whole problem here is only a Din Derabonan. We're not worried about whether there is or isn't really a value of Shevet Pruta over there, because the Rosh believes that, because you don't go after Mamon, Ela Makom B'Shato, that money or objects that you're valuing all have to do with the location and the time, and we don't go look for other places or other possibilities of where the value could be higher. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, we have cases like this, which was, how gavra da'aktish b'zavdo d'urdi. There was this individual that got married or engaged halachically with a bundle of cotton. Yoti Rav Shimi Bar Chiya Kamed Rav V'Kamayin Ba. He was checking out whether it was really worth a pruta or not. Eid Be Shove Pruta In. If it had the value of a Shove Pruta, he would have said it is Kedushin. Ilolo. If it not, not. V'Ilei Leiba Shove Pruta. If it doesn't have a Shove Pruta, lo. Why are you so particular about whether it's worth a Shove Pruta or not? Didn't we already say V'Amar Shmuel Chashinan? We worry about the fact that it's worth a Shove Pruta somewhere else. So even if it's not worth a Shove Pruta, you have to be choshesh for these Kedushin. It says, Lo Kasha. Habi Kedushe Vadai, Habi Kedushe Safek. Depends on what we're looking at. If I can determine that it's worth the Shove Pruta here, then we have real Kedushin, Kedushin Vadain. If we're talking about the fact that because of Shmuel we're choshesh that it might be worth a Pruta somewhere else, then we're talking about Safek Kedushin. And again, whether that means that it's a Safek Midorait or Safek Midorabanan also has impact over here. But that's not the same thing as being Kedushin Vadai. And obviously, the Nafgamina is, if someone comes in the interim and offers her another Kiddushin. In the case, if it's Vadai she's married and she had a Pruta in the first case, then the second guy is irrelevant. On the other hand, if it's a Safek Kiddushin and the second guy comes and proposes Kiddushin, she now has Safek Kiddushin from two individuals, from the first and the second. The first one, because maybe it was good Kiddushin. And if it wasn't, then maybe the second one is a good Kiddushin. So now she'll have to get a get from both parties. So it makes a difference. How Gavro, the Aktish Ba'avna de Kuchla. So this individual got married using, whether it was black or blue, Rashi says marble. Yotiv Rav Chista, v'kamisharle. Rav Chista was sitting there trying to evaluate the value of this object. Iipe Shove Pruta in. That's a Shove Pruta, then we have Kiddushin. Ilolo. V'ilei Be'i Shove Pruta lo. Wait, if it doesn't have a Shove Pruta, it's not good. Va'amar Shmuel Chashinon. Didn't Shmuel say we worry about it even if it doesn't have a value of a pruta? Rav Chista, though, suffer like the Shmuel. So instead of saying the difference that we said before with the regards to Rav Shimi Bar Chiya in front of Rav, where he says, oh, the difference is whether it's Kedushe Vada, Kedushe Safek, here the Gemara concludes that Rav Chista doesn't hold of Shmuel's position. Tosavot says, Hacha lo matzi lishnoei habi Kedushe Safek edel. Why don't they give the same answer that they gave by the case of Rav Shimi Bar Chiya? You can answer that. One is Kedushe Vadai, one is Kedushe Safek. So why don't you answer that? Why do you have to say that he doesn't hold like Shmuel? So he says, because the case is where a brother gave her Kiddushin right after that. So now, if we say that the first one is a Safek, then she would need a get from the first one, and she would be asur to the second guy no matter what. Because either, if she was married to the first guy, then the second guy's Kiddushin were no good. But if he gets a divorce now, she'll become Grushat Achiv. So now, Mimon of Shach, the second guy can't marry her. So therefore, we see that he didn't think it was a Safek by the first guy. Because if he thought it was a Safek by the first guy, then the second brother would have no relevance in this case. He'd be Asur no matter what. Either his brother's married to the woman, and even if we demand a divorce from the first brother because of the Safek, it doesn't help out the second brother. He can't marry anyway because now she is a Safek Grushat Achiv. So for that reason, Tosafot says that it's clear here that Rav Chista does not subscribe to Shmuel's position, because if he subscribed to Shmuel's position, then the first brother would be a Safek, and that would eliminate the second brother no matter what. The fact that we're even discussing the second brother shows you that he doesn't think that the first brother is a Safek. He thinks that there either is or isn't Kiddushin over here. So Amrlei Imei. So the mother piped up and says, "Va'ahu Yoma de Kacha ve'Beisha ve'Puta." On the day that he gave it to her as her wedding present, as the engagement value, it was worth a pruta on that day. Amar la, Rav Chista says to the mother, Lo ko kaminach dasar la abatra. You do not have sufficient weight here to make her a surah to the second brother. So again, this is the case here where it was two brothers. One brother got halakhically engaged kiddushin with this marble that we weren't sure if it was worth the Shove Pruta. Then the second brother stepped in and also offered Kiddushin after that. Right. So the mother steps up and says that the first brother's item was worth a Pruta. That means that she's married fully to the first brother. The second brother is irrelevant in this case. Rav Chista says, what right do you have to come in here and discard the second brother, or basically say that he's irrelevant because the first brother's Kiddushin had a Pruta in it? Lav hainu diyudit debitu de Rabbi Chiya. Isn't this similar to the case of Yehudit, the wife of Rabbi Chiya? If you remember, we saw Yehudit in the Gemara in Yevamot. Over there, it was discussing the Gemara in Yevamot, and Samachim Abed is talking about Kos Ikarin. He's talking about the permissibility of a woman to drink some sort of medicinal potion that would render her an akara, unable to bear children. So over there, it tells the story of Yehudit, the wife of Rabbi Chiya, who gave birth to twins, and then to another set of twins. And her pregnancies and labor were so painful that she refused or didn't want to have any more children. And therefore she drinks a kos ikarin, much to the dismay of Rabbi Chiya over there. She drinks a kos ikarin and he says, oh, had she just borne me another set of twins? And she was not in any mood to have another set of twins. She had had two sets of twins already. So there it says about Yehudit bidu Rabbi Chiya, dehavit latzar leida. Her labor pangs, her birthings were very difficult. Amrelei, she said to her husband, to Rabbi Chiya, Amrelei aim, my mother told me, kibel beich avuch kidushe kizutrat. When you were a young girl, when you were a ktana, your father accepted kidushin from another man. In other words, what she was trying to do is saying, we're not married. We can't be married because I'm really married to someone else. She was trying to get out of the marriage because of the pain and the labor and basically say, you know, there are a lot of questions about our marriage. Maybe we shouldn't stay married any longer. Amar La, he said back to her, Lav ko kamina dimech, your mother does not have the power or the weight, dasad leich ilavai, to make you a surah to me. Your mother's testimony about something that happened in the past is not relevant right now. So he's basically extrapolating to say should be over here. The mother can't come in after the fact and declare that it was worth a shaveh pruta earlier on. Just like the mother can't come into the fray here and tell Rabbi Chiya, oh, your wife really was married to someone else beforehand. Amrei lei Rabbanon Rav Chista, mai? So Rabbanon said to Rav Chista, why? Ha'ika sadei be'idit. Diade ba'u yomad ave'be shaveh pruta. There are witnesses out there in Idit, in this faraway place. And Tosfot has the Girsa of Urit, is the place that they're in. The Yadu Ayom Aveshavi Pruta, that knows that there's a Shavu Pruta, says, Hashta, Mia, Litnehu Kaman. You have to skip the word low, otherwise it becomes a double negative, which is low, Litnehu, you can't say that. So, Hashta, Mia, Litnehu Kaman. The Edim are not present right now. Now, Rav Chista is the case over here where the mother was saying that the first son's marriage was a full marriage because it was worth a Shavu Pruta. So Rav Chista wants to discard her testimony because it's similar to the case of the Bitu de Rabbi Chiya, the wife of Rabbi Chiya, who brings up something years later after there's been a lot of history over here. All of a sudden she brings up a topic that should have been known or disclosed much earlier on. So all of a sudden now, when she shows up with the information, we don't believe the information because the individuals here are no geah b'davar. In the case of Rav Chista, she's coming in to defend her son who married first. In the case over here by Yehudit, her mother's trying to get her out of the marriage because she's having so much pain from the births. So in both those cases, the people testifying have vested interests in saying what they're saying. Right. The information should have been disclosed much earlier or known much earlier. Right. So now the fact that it all of a sudden shows up over now, we disregard it. We can't take that into consideration now. But then the Rabbanan said to Rav Chista, okay, forget about the mother. We have Edim overseas or far away who are suggesting that, and if they came here, if we got a hold of them, they would tell us that it was worth the Shavu Pruta on that day. So we have Edim to the fact. Rav Chista responds to them and says, the Edim aren't here. We're not going to worry about it. Live hainu de Rabbi Chanina. Isn't this the case of Rabbi Chanina? Dam Rabbi Chanina. Idea b'tzad istan v'te'aser. The Edim are all the way out in Istan, and we're going to make them asur. So now the case of Rabbi Chanina is the case in Ketubot. In the case of Ketubot, b'natei de Shmuel, the daughters of Shmuel were taken into captivity. The truth is that it's a very difficult case over there because the daughters of Shmuel end up falling for their captors and marrying their captors. One of the daughters of Shmuel, Rachel, marries Isur Guria, who was her captor who eventually converted. They have a child who is always known in the Gemara as Barbrat de Shmuel, as the grandson of Shmuel, not by his father's name, because his father was a convert, but he converted after she was already pregnant with him. He was horato shelo b'kedusha, later told b'kedusha, which was that he was conceived when his father was not Jewish. He was born when his father was Jewish, but because of that, he's known by his grandfather's name, not directly by his father's name. Now, Rabbi Chanina, when the daughters of Shmuel came back to quote-unquote civilization, they came to the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Chanina. They walk into the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Chanina and they tell the captors to stay outside. They go into the Beit Midrash and they tell Rabbi Chanina, we were captured and we are Tohorim. We were captured and we are Tohorim. There the Gemara says, or as a principle, Pesha Osur Hu Pesha Hitir, that if she tells us, or the only way we know that she was in captivity is because she testifies to that fact, and she also tells us the fact that they are Tohorim, then we say they are Tohorim, we believe them, no problem. So in that case, they come before Rabbi Chanina, and the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Chanina, and they say to the captor, stay outside. And they come in and they say, we were Nishbeiti V'Torahani, I was taken into captivity, but I am Torah. And then the other daughter said the same thing. And Rabbi Chanina is mater them lekuna, because they were testifying about themselves as Pesha Asur, Pesha Yitir. Over there, the Gemara says, Haika Sade b'minidatayam. Weren't there witnesses, not there, but in a far-flung place, there were witnesses to the fact that they were taken into captivity. So Amar Rabbi Chanina, Eda b'tzad istan v'teaser, just because you have Edim that are far away in istan, therefore, you're going to worry about this. We're going to say that these girls are problematic. So therefore, he disregards the fact that there are Edim overseas. And we basically say that the woman is believed over here because she's the only modem of evidence that we have, because she said, I was taken into captivity. The fact that there are Edim overseas, they know that, that's not relevant to the case. So what Rav Chisda says is the same thing here. The fact that there are Edim far away that know it's Hashem Vepruta, why should that impact on the case over here? The Tosfot notes over here, when we say that there are Edim that know, it doesn't mean that we are worried that there are Edim that know. Maybe there are Edim that know. On the other hand, it also can't be that we know for sure that there are Edim who know, because of both of those possibilities, either if it's just a safek, we would not be choshesh for it, maybe, we don't worry about it. But if we know for sure there are Edim, and they can testify, then we definitely should get the information for them. And therefore, Elanir Lari the Faresh, that there are rumors that there are Edim. So it's more substantiated than simply, oh, maybe there are Edim overseas. On the other hand, it's not so substantiated where we would say bring the Edim in because somebody knows for sure about this. Some in-between knowledge that makes it that maybe you should check it out or look into the matter. All right, so now the Gemara says, Rava did not accept this position of Chista. Rav Chisda is comprised of two dinim. One din is the din of Debitu the Rabbi Chia, Yehudit, the wife of Rabbi Chia, which is that when the mother shows up with information after the fact, we disregard that information because it's too late, and it's someone who's nogeba davar, so that information will not be determinant in the case. That's one part of his position. Second part of his position is if there are edim overseas, far away, that might know, but they're not present, then we paskin the case with what we have in front of us, and we don't worry about those Edim that are overseas, and that's premised on the Shita of Rabbi Chanina. Again, this whole case of Rabbi Chanina is a difficult case, both here and in the Gemara Ketubot, because, first of all, the daughters of Shmuel were not Tehorim, because we know that they had fallen for their captors, and they eventually married their captors. But Rabbi Chanina believes them as Matzelem the Kuhuna, and they end up marrying the captors. But leaving that aside, he ignores the fact that they're Edim overseas, and that's what Rav Chisda does over here as well. So Bai Rova reject that position of Rav Chisda and say, Im hekilu bishvuya, demenavlo nafsha gabi shavai. If we were meko by a shvuya, a woman who's taken into captivity because she is disdain or does not have a desire to be together with her captors, nekel be'eshet ish, therefore, we're going to be mekel in the case of an eshet ish, in a case of a married woman, where there is attraction and where there is a reason to believe that they are engaging in halachic kiddushin. So there should be a difference between the cases. It's one thing to ignore edim when you're talking about a captive. When you're talking about a captive, there is reason to believe that she's Torah because she has a natural disdain or repulsion or abhorrence, reticence to engage with the shavai, captors. And therefore we'll say, forget about those Eidim overseas. Because in a sense, we have leaned towards the side of believability by them. On the other hand, by Nation Ish, there's no reason to believe that she didn't get married or that the Eidim that are overseas shouldn't help us out or we shouldn't bring them in here. Because if they are married, they should be married. And that was their desire to be married. She accepted the item. So therefore, they differentiate between the cases. Again, it's interesting here that the Gemara assumes that Heikilu Bishvuyad Menavla Nafsha, which is not true by the daughters of Shmuel. There's a Shmuel, they did fall for their captors, despite that natural reticence and repulsion for the captors. But Abaye Varova make that distinction and say, just because Rabbi Chanina was makil about the Eidim overseas, doesn't mean that you should be makil by the case here, Rav Chista, in the case of an Eshet Ish. Tosfot over here brings down, Itzvarim Shekatuben, Mishum Denavla Nafsha Nekel Be'eshet Ish. So he says that there's some Gemarot that have the Girsa that we have in our Gemara. The other possible girsa is im hikalnu b'shvuya. Just because we're mekel by a shvua doesn't mean we should be mekel in other cases. That would be a statement without giving reason for why we're mekel by shvua versus eshet ish. Simply that there is kula by a shvuya that doesn't apply by eshet ish. And here Tosafot formulates it in one of two ways. V'yesh mefarshim im hikalnu b'shvuya. Why are we mekel by shvua? And mishum tafilu ika sade shenish beit. Because even if the Eidim show up and say she was taken into captivity, they don't know if she had biyah. In that you have two problems here. You have one problem, which is she's taken into captivity. Number two is, even if she's in captivity, how do we know that she had biyah with the captors, which would make her psula the kuna? So even if you get the Eidim here, you still don't have definitive evidence of the fact that this woman is tmeah. Okay, so now we can't invoke the principle of Padash Osir Peser Hitir. But still, all the Eidim are going to tell you is that she was taken into captivity. They're not going to tell you whether she really had BR or not. Versus, Im Kenena Asura Min HaTorah. Over here, she's not Asura Min HaTorah because we don't have evidence of the fact that she was a Zona and she'd be Asura LeKohen Gadol. Nekob Eshet Ish, Deika Sadei Oto Avna Dekuchla Yit Bashar Pruta VeEshet Ish Gmura. Because here, if the Eidim show up and tell us that it was worth a Pruta, they are married Midoraita. The Eidim are sufficient evidence to give us everything we need. So that's one way to learn the difference here. If the Eidim show up, they're not going to give us full information anyway. They're just going to give us a piece of the information that they were taken into captivity. They're not going to give us the piece that we need, which is whether they had bi'ah with the captors or not. So we're still in a world of safek anyway. Whereas here, if the Eidim show up and tell us whether it was worth a pruta or not, those Eidim will be final and determinant in this case. If they say it's worth a pruta, she's fully married. And there's no other evidence that we need. So therefore, that's the difference in the cases. That's one way to formulate it. Those brings v'yesh mefarshim. And another way to formulate it is im hekalu b'shvuya mishum delek ela isur lav de zona. Even if we find out that she was a zona and she marries a kohen, we're only talking about an isur lav here. Whereas if we bring the edim here in the case of the pruta, then we're talking about a case of eshet ish, which is an isur chenek. That's a death penalty. So you're talking about something that is much more chamur. Now, Tosafot rejects that and says, "Lo nehira, she'shvuya nami pamim ishtiki isur mita." Because there's sometimes that there is a death penalty when it comes to a shvuya as well. Imhu kohen b'yishlo ben mimena. Because if he's a kohen and she bears a child from him, that child will be a halal. And if he goes and works in the mikdash and does a vote in the mikdash when he's a halal, he's not a kohen, then he's going to be chayav mita. So you can't just claim that there's only an Isra Lav by Shvuya and an Isra Mita by Eshet Ish, because sometimes the Isra Lav by the Kohen ends up becoming an Isra Mita as well. There are ramifications that could involve the death penalty as well. So Tosafot rejects that second explanation and goes along with the first explanation, that the difference is on what the Eidim are going to do for us. What are the Eidim going to clarify for us? By Shvuya, they will not clarify the whole situation, only a part of it. Whereas here, in the case of Rav Chista, they would clarify everything for us. And that is the difference between them. So the pshat, or the simple way to read the Gemara, is that a shvuya is not necessarily interested in her captor, and therefore we can make an assumption or a chazaka that she didn't get involved with the captor. So we're not going to go out of our way to find these edim to make her asura. Then by Eshet Ish, where she accepted the kiddushin, and now it's just a question of value, over there the edim are valuable because they will help us just clarify. And the way that the Tosfot 3, as a Kain of Eir, formulates it is, Bishvuya, Batam, Shavu Bishnish Beit, Loyalano Lo Osra, Misafek, Shayalano L'amida al chazaka ubechezkat kshera haita. So by Yeshvuya, her chazaka or chezkat kshera, and therefore all we know is that she was taken into captivity. We don't know anything more than that, and therefore her chazaka should stand. So there, in a case where we can be mekio and we can say, ah, the Edim aren't here, we're not going to worry about it, we will be. Here she's left the chazakah being a pnuya because she accepted kesef kiddushin. Everybody agrees that she accepted it. We're just worrying about whether there was value in it or not. Therefore the chazakah is diminished. Even though now we don't have a shavuta. Since the rumors already circulating that she's married or they were with the shavuta, that already is taking down her chezkat kashrut or chezkat pnuya. And therefore, we should deal with the Edim that oversees and not just ignore them. Because Rav Chisda believes, Ho v'hashta chazina delepe u'shavipruta. Now then, Rav Chisda says, whatever's in front of us doesn't have a shavipruta. And if that's the case, then, yish la'amida b'chezkat pnuya, dumi d'shvuya. She should remain in her status as a chezkat pnuya unless we can prove otherwise. Just like the shvuya as a chezkat tara. And so the same way by the shvuya, we don't worry about those Edim overseas. I'm not going to worry about the Edim overseas over here as well. With regards to the marble, that is not worth the Shavapruto. Tosafot reads it not in that simple terms, but more along the lines of, there's a difference in what the Edut will bring us in each of these cases. The value of the Edut is different. And that's why we'll have a different outcome or whether we are Choshesh for the Edim. So for that reason, Abai and Rova reject this assumption of Rav Chisda. Ishtar mihayim mishpacha besura. From that family where the two brothers, they was leftovers or parts of that family were in Surah, Upershu Rabbanan Mina. The Rabbanan would not marry into that family. Lav Mishum the Sphere Luk Shmuel. It's not because they held like Shmuel. Remember, if you hold like Shmuel, then you'll be choshesh that the item was worth the pruta somewhere else. So what they're gonna say is, oh, the first brother gave her this marble. We're not sure if it's worth the pruta here or not. But it's definitely worth the pruta somewhere else. If that was the case, then that would be the chashash, and that's why they'd be worried about the second brother who married her. They don't hold of Shmuel, so that's not the problem. What's their problem? The Abai and Rova. They hold like Abai and Rova that you gotta get the Edim. And the fact that Rav Chisda didn't get the Edim left this as a situation that should have been clarified and wasn't clarified. And so because of that, they were not comfortable with saying that it wasn't worth a pruta. And that we don't worry about what the mother said, we don't worry about the Edim out there. Bayan Rova said we do worry about the Edim out there, and because of that chashash, the Rabbanan wouldn't marry into this family. Oh, Gavro, the Oktish Bishutita Da'asa Bishuka. It was this individual who was Magdish with a bundle of myrtle or a stalk of myrtle in the shuk. Shalcha Rav Acha Barhuna Lekameder Rav Yosef. So Rav Acha Barhuna sent to Rav Yosef, Ki I gav namai. What do I do with this case? How do I determine whether this guy's married or not? So shalach le nagvek Rav. First of all, give malkot to this guy, like Rav. V'yitzchok gita kishmuel. And then make him give her a get, like Shmuel. So now the Gemara explains, Shmuel we already know. Shmuel is the fact that, even if it's not worth the pruta here, we're choshesh it's worth the pruta somewhere else. So they had the seam, even if they're not inherently worth the pruta right now, they could be worth the pruta somewhere else. Then we have to give a get misafek either way. So either she could be married, vadai, if it's worth the pruta, but if not, then he may be worth the pruta someone else, and that chashash is what Shmuel spoke about, and you have to get a get like Shmuel. On the other hand, give him malkot like Rav. This Rav is very fundamental. We've discussed it many times. The Rav, mangid al mekadesh b'shuka. Rav gave malkot to anybody who was mekadesh, a woman in the shuk. That was considered to be a pritsuta. It was something that was considered to be unacceptable for such an, call it intimate, connection with another party, that you do it out in the public eye, that's not an appropriate place to engage in kiddushin with a woman. Vaud mekadesh bebia. This is the one that's important. He says that anybody who uses bia for kiddushin, he gives malkot to them. Vaud mekadesh lo shiduche. Someone who gets married without having a shiduch. Over here, shiduch is not the way it's used today in the classic sense of shiduch, but rather, he offers kiddushin to a woman without ever speaking to her beforehand. Meaning that there was no interaction between the parties prior to their kiddushin. We want the relationship or the kiddushin to not simply be what I would call a transaction. If you have mekadesh below shiduche, then you have a transaction-natured engagement over here, rather than a relationship that is being established. What Rav is trying to say is, this is something that is the basis for the marriage and the relationship to come. And therefore, we want to get it off on the proper footing. So how do you do that? First of all, you don't get engaged in the middle of the shuk. That's not the place to establish a relationship of closeness, intimacy, and personal relationship. Number two, mikadesh bebia, which we'll discuss in 1 second, which would be inappropriate. And then mikadesh b'loshuduche is the same problem. If you're engaging the woman without ever talking to her, ever speaking to her, that means it's more like a transactional kiddushin than a relationship kiddushin, and we don't want that. We want a relationship to be established over here, not a transaction. Val de mevatel gita, on someone who is mevatel a get. Rashi claims the cases here where the husband sends a get to the shliach, and then nullifies the get and says it's not a good get. And then the shliach goes anyway and gives the get to the woman. So that's what Rashi says. So that's a churba that'll come out of that. The get's not a valid get. The shliach gave it to the woman. The woman thinks she's divorced. And she's really not divorced. Tosafot doesn't like Rashi's explanation because it makes the shliach into a rasha. The shliach knows that the get was nullified and yet he still delivers it to the woman. Why would you set up a case? We're dealing with shayim over here. So Tosafot claims that the case is a case where he nullified the get after he sent it with the shliach, went before a Beit Din and he nullified it after he sent the shliach. Remember, in the Gemara in Gittin, there was an institution by Rabbi Gamliel that did not allow you to nullify Gittin anymore. Originally, they just nullified the get whenever. Then they changed that and they said you have to go and nullify it in front of Beit Din because that'll have a kala and then the woman will find out about it. But Gamliel came in and said, no more of that. You can't even nullify it in front of a Beit Din because, again, seems like travel was becoming more common. People were moving around. And then even if it was in a Beit Din, it wasn't clear that the woman was going to get the information. So over there they said, no more doing this. There's a machloket in the Gemara there. Does the nullification work or does it not work? Is it mevutal or eno mevutal? The opinion of Rabbi is that if you do mevatel the get, in bitlo mevutal is the shita of Rabbi. That despite the fact that Gamaliel instituted that you can't do it anymore, if you do do it, it works, according to Rabbi. Now, according to Rabbi Gamaliel, once he did that, it doesn't work and it's over. So based on that, he says, the manda amar, according to Rabbi, who says over there, in bitlo mevutal, then that's what it's speaking about here. Rabbi used to give malkot, someone who was mevatel the get in Beit Din. So even though you're not supposed to do that, if you do it, it is effective, and Rabbi would give malkot for that because that could create a churva. He says, and I feel the manda amar ham ibelo enu mevutal, that according to one who says there, if you go to Beit Din and try to be mevatel the get, it doesn't work because of Gamaliel's institution that it doesn't work. Nevertheless, he's motzi laz on the get. So even there, we'll give him malkot because somebody's going to see that or somebody's going to cast aspersion on the get because this guy went to Beit Din to be mevatel it. Even though it doesn't work, people are going to think that it did work and that'll cause problems for the woman. Valdamasar moda gita. Someone who, moda means an announcement really, but it means here that he casts aspersions on a get. That he starts to circulate rumors or problems that are mentioned about a get after the fact, after a woman's already married, after the get has already gone through. There again he gave malkot because we don't want people coming and causing huge problems for people, causing their rumors to be shunned in society, their children to be mamzerim. So he used to stop that as well. The Alde Mitzar Shlucho de Rabbonon, and someone who gives a shliach Beit Din, according to Rashi, a hard time and actually beats him up, the sheriff that's coming to enforce or to carry out the word of Beit Din, the person fights back or beats up this individual, according to Rashi. According to others, you don't have to physically have an altercation with him, but simply, if you denigrate him or you dismiss the sheriff sent by the Beit Din, that is subject to Malkot because of the inappropriate treatment of the agent of the Beit Din, who is seen as an extension of the Beit Din, and as if a person was insulting or defying the Beit Din. Ve'al, d'chala shamte lavet latin yomin. Anybody who has put into excommunication for 30 days, and he's in there for 30 days because he hasn't relented, he hasn't asked for forgiveness, he hasn't fixed the problem, then he starts to give Malkot, to increase the pressure on the individual, not just to sit around in excommunication, but to deal with the issue. And on a son-in-law that lives in his in-law's house. The dire in, if he lives there, it's problematic. Khaliflo. But if he just temporarily or they occasionally stay over, that's not a problem. All right, so we're going to discuss all of these. Again, we've given the reason behind the ones that have to do with get and to excommunication. We dealt with most of those with regards to kiddushin. The one that we did not deal with is a Mekadesh Bebiya. The question of being Mekadesh Bebiya, Rav feels that the Mekadesh Bebiya was inappropriate or was not the proper way to get halachically engaged, even though the Torah gives you the right to do it. You can be Mekadesh Bekesef Shtar Ubiya. Despite that fact, Rav wants to stop the process or the practice of getting engaged or luckily engaged with Biya. The way that Tosafot explains it over here is, Mefereish Rabbeinu Tam, Dehainu Pritzuta. The problem with the Kaddish Biya is it's another form of Pritzut, like the other items that he mentions here. Fichet Tzarich, Oede Biya, Oede Yichud. The only way that he can have Kiddushin through Biya is to have Edim come and either witness the Biya or have them stand outside the room knowing that he's doing Biya. V'davar Mechuar, Shemamid Edim Akach. Such a personal, intimate thing that takes place between a man and a woman, to put Edim there to testify about that or to be witness to that, unacceptable, total pritzuta, and that's why Rav wants to stop that process. On the other hand, the Ri says, that's not the case. That's not considered to be pritzuta. How do I know that? Because by Yivama, the only way that a Yivama can be acquired by the Yavam is through Biyah, and you need Edim for that. So the Torah prescribes Edim in that type of case, and you see that the Torah doesn't have any worry about Pritzuta. So what are you introducing Pritzuta here by Kiddushin if you already have a paradigm by Yibum? Now the truth is that that might be the machlok between them as to whether you need Edim by Yibum or not. Meaning that, do you need Edim for the Yibum? Possibility that the Rabbeinu Tam believes that you do not need Edim by Yibum. Either because what you describe as Zika, but the clear way to say it is that Makneya la min shamayo. From the heavens, they gave him this woman. He didn't choose to acquire or marry this woman. From a shamayim, his brother passed away without children. It fell into his possession. And now when he has biya, it automatically creates the kiddushin, and you don't need a dim for that. Because it's a kinyan that's established min shamayim. That kinyan that is established min shamayim already is strong enough that you don't need a dim to make it into a full-fledged kinyan. That might be the shita of the Rabbeinu Tam in the Rashbo, that say that it happens without any Edim, and therefore he doesn't see that as a disproof to his position. Because then Edim by Kiddushin would be a Pitzuta. But then the Ri and the Ritva says something similar. You need Edim for the Kiyum Hadavar. You need Ede Kiyum by Yivama as well. That's the case. Then if you already have a paradigm like that by Yibum, then why shouldn't it work by Kiddushin? And therefore it says, Elanir the Reed, Dainu Pitzut, Shosim Tkilat Kinyanan, Bebiya, Dudumi the Mekadesh Velushri Duche. That if you make the beginning of your Kinyan such an intimate item, it's the equivalent of marrying the woman without ever talking to her, without ever speaking to her. So it again treats the woman not as a partner or in a relationship, but simply, in the case of Velushri Duche, like a transaction, as if you're just buying the woman and not speaking to her. The same thing with the Bia. Bia makes it sound like you're just trying to change her into a zona, right? You're just trying to get this intimate act with this woman, and right up front, without any developing any relationship, any closeness with the woman, he engages in Bia immediately. So that's, again, a problem of a pritzuta of sorts, but the pritzuta in the sense that it's just too intimate a way to create kiddushin. The other thing to note over here is that machloka that we saw before in the Gemara in Ketubot and in Gittin, which is the machloka between Rashi and the Rebbeim Shel Rashi, as well as the Rambam that's brought in, we discussed this many times, whether Kiddushei Kesef are a Midoraita or Midrabanan. Rashi believes that Kiddushei Kesef Midoraita is due most of the Rishonim, that all three forms of Kiddushin are approved by the Torah, and each one of them works Midoraita. On the other hand, the Rebbeim of Rashi believed that Kiddushei Kesef were only a din derabanan. And that is why the Gemara says in places, whenever it wants to be mafkia the Kiddushim, it says, Tinach Kiddushei Kesef. I understand why Kiddushei Kesef, you can eliminate them, the Rabbanan can eliminate them, because they're only derabanan. So one derabanan can come and override another derabanan. But Mekadesh Bebiya, what are you going to do there? Because that's a Kinyan Doraita. How can the Rabbanan come in mafkia? Gemara says that they made it into a biat znut. They changed his biat into a bilat znut. That's the answer of the Gemara. The way Rashi reads all of those Gemaras is, well, Kiddushei Kesef Midoraita. But still, they're abundant have power there because of Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker. The question is, by biat, how do they have a right? Or what can they do there? The answer is, they can change his biat to a biat znut. That's the way Rashi learns the Gemara. And both Kesef and biat are Doraita. The Rebbeim Shem Rashi say, no. When it says tinach, that we can get rid of kiddushin bekesev, is because that's a din derabanan. So the rabbanan can come and override a din derabanan. Kiddushin biyah that are doraita, how do you get rid of those? My answer is because we made them into a bilad znut. The way the Reb Shirashi read it is based on this statement of Rav here. The Rav mankin to mekadesh bebiyah. Rav gave malkol to someone who had kiddushin through biyah. Why? Because Rav was mafkiyah the kiddushin. Rav said that when you're mekadesh bebiyah, you get malkot. And it's ois kedushin. There's no kedushin anymore. That's what the Rebbeim of Rashi believed, that out of Rav, or the derivative of Rav, was that not only did he give malkot for mekadesh bebiyah, he also disallowed that vehicle for creating kedushin. Basically, he said there is no more such thing as kedushin through biyah. And that's what it means, that shavya bilato biladznut. They made it to biladznut because Rav eliminated that possibility of getting kedushin through biyah. Rashi rejects it and says that's not said anywhere here. All Rav says, if you're Mekadesh Bebiya, you get Malkot. He doesn't anywhere here annul the Kiddushin. The Kiddushin go through. You're just going to get Malkot if you use that as the vehicle for marriage. So, interesting enough, Biya, which is the most powerful form of Kiddushin, in the sense that, even according to Rebbeim Shirashi, that's Deoraita, and in a sense is the most intimate and strongest form of Biya, yet, for the same reasons, we don't want you using Biya. And we don't want using that vehicle. We'd rather use kesef. According to Rashi, again, it's still deoraita, but even according to his Rebbeim, where it's the rabbana, we would favor you using kesef and shtar over biyah for the same reasons that biyah is such a good form of kiddushin. It's also a bad form of kiddushin. And we don't want you using something so intimate and so powerful as the vehicle for kiddushin. And now the Gemara says about this issue of a son-in-law sleeping by his in-laws. He says here, v'ha'u achatno. There was his son-in-law, the Khalif Baba the Bechamua. He used to go by or pass by the house of his in-laws. V'namdei Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet gave him Malkot. Makes it sound like, forget about living there. Even if you're passing in and out of the house, it's problematic. How midam have a daimo chamtei minei? Midam have a daimo is a word that we saw in Sultan, in Ketubot. Doma is someone who has suspicions surrounding them. There are rumors circulating. There are questions about their behavior. So over here, Midam Avadaima, rumors were swirling about this individual with his mother-in-law already. So now we see him going back and forth to the house, going in and out. Rav Sheshet says, we're going to stop this right now. He can't go there. That obviously substantiates the rumors or makes the situation worse. For that reason, we give Malkot. So the problem, as Rashi says over here, we don't let the son-in-law and daughter live in the house of the in-laws because, as Rashi says over here, that the mother-in-law, her heart is set on her first son-in-law, and therefore there is high likelihood for a illicit affair between them. Now the Rambam suggests that the problem here is not like what Rashi says, that there might be some sort of romantic affair between the mother-in-law and the son-in-law, but rather the problem that it's just inappropriate for the young couple to have intimacy in the house of the daughter's father with their family. Others suggest that the problem here is only in a case when there are rusin. The problem is that when they are engaged halachically but yet to be married, then the husband-to-be, the son-in-law, should not live in the house with her because that is just asking for trouble or the possibility of an aveira being carried out because they are in close quarters or proximity even though they are still a surim to each other. Rav did not give Malkot for any of these cases except for the case of Lo Shiduchei. That even with Shiduchim, they used to give it because of Pritzut, which would be in the Mekadesh Bebiyah. Tosfot says, what about today? With today in our time, all the daughters and son-in-laws are living in their in-laws' houses. How is that possible? What Tosfot says over here, Bekulo lo man gid Rav, that which Nardoa said that we don't give Malkot, the son-in-laws today rely on this, because they live in their mother-in-law's house. They live in their in-law's house. How do you live in your in-law's house if there's this problem where the Gemara says over here, Rav gives him malkot for his son-in-laws that are living in their in-law's house? So here's the answer. The answer is that they hold like Nardo, who says you don't get malkot for that. So he says, wait a minute. Even if you hold like Rav, and we do worry about it, you do get malkot, there is a solution to the problem here, which is, which is, the reason that all kids live with their parents is that the rent is free. So there is actually a monetary decision here, not simply a decision of convenience or because there might be some sort of illicit romance that's going on. The reason they're living with their in-laws has nothing to do with the son-in-law, mother-in-law relationship, and all to do with the monetary benefits that they get. They're living rent-free. They get free meals. They get free babysitting. There are all of these benefits that accrue to them from living there. So there is a hochacha that the reason they live there has nothing to do with any problematic relationship and everything to do with the savings that they garner by living by their in-laws. So Tosfos says, even if you're choshesh for that, we don't worry about it because today the reason is monetary in nature, nothing to do with the suspicions that we're talking about in the Gemara. But if you hold like Nardo, then for sure you don't have to worry about it because they weren't in Mangid. They did not give Mako for that situation. How Gavra, the Kaddish Mitzifta da Asa. There was this individual who got married with actually calls it tzifta, a mat made out of myrtle. Amrule, valet basha vipruta. He said to him, it doesn't have a shavipruta. Amrule, tiktush barba zuze dipa. Wait, that's okay. I wrapped up 4 zuz inside of the mat. Shakalta vishtika. The woman took the mat, but was silent. Amarova, havishtikuta d'lacha matan ma'ot. The silence after the money was already given. Choshtikuta d'lacha matan ma'ot lav klumi. If you have silence after the money is already given, that is meaningless. Amarova minai minalo. How can I prove to you that that's the case? That when you have silence after the fact, it is meaningless. Titanio, you have a braita. Tosefta from Kiddushin. Amarla. Kinsi selo zo bipikadon. Take this sela as a pikadon. I want you to watch it for me. I want you to be a shomeret on this sela. Chazar amarla idkachilibo. Then he says, you know, after he's given to her to watch, he says, you know what? Why don't you get married to me with that sela? B'shat matan ma'ot. If it happens at the time that he's giving the money to her originally, mikudeshet. L'achar matan ma'ot. If she already is in possession of the money, watching it for him, ratzta mikudeshet. If she wants it, she's mikudeshet. Lo ratzta ain't a mikudeshet. If she doesn't want it, then she's not mikudeshet. May ratzta, may lo ratzta. What does it mean that she wants it or she doesn't want it? Ilei maratzta da amra in. If you say Ratz, that means that she says yes when he tells her, let's get married with this coin that I have deposited with you. Lo Ratzta Damra Lo. When she says, I don't want it, she says, no, I don't want to get married. Michlal, from that you would say that the ratio, that's the safer case. Safer case is where the money's already deposited, and there the bright differentiates between whether she acquiesces or doesn't. So if you tell me that agreement is either she said yes or no, then the implications are in the ratio, where the bright makes no distinction. And when he hands her the ma'ot and she accepts it, she's automatically married. Ki amra lo, nami yavi kiddushin. Even if she says, no, 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 I don't want to be married with this, and she takes the money, she's married? Why should she be married? Amai, va'ak amra lo? She's saying no. When she says no, no means no, and there is no marriage over here. Elalav, it must be that this is the case. Rotzta damra'in. If she wants it and she says yes, when it's already deposited with her, that works. Lo ratzta, the case where she doesn't want it is, Dishtika mishtaka. She just remains silent. He says, you know that coin I have deposited with you? I want to marry you with it. No response from her. So that's what he says. That braita says, not married. So why is that? Because that's shtikuta l'achar matan ma'ot. That's silence after she's already in possession of the money. Since she's already in possession of the money, that's not an acquiescence. Her silence, her shtika, is not a hoda. On the other hand, if at the time he's handing her the money, says, I want to get married with this money that I'm handing to you. Originally, I engaged with her saying, oh, you want to watch the money? He says, you know what? I changed my mind. I want you to get married with this money. Over there, if she's silent, that shtika is hoda. Because there, when she accepts the money, it's clear that the acceptance of the money is coming wrapped in whatever his decoration is over here. And that shtika is hoda. When the money's already deposited with her, and she's a shomeret over this money, and then he says, oh, I want to get married with the money didn't come into her possession because of that. Her silence there is not necessarily acquiescence. Her silence is the status quo remains. What's the status quo? Then I'm watching it. I'm not getting married with this money. Shmamina. So from this you would conclude that shtika d'lachar matan ma'ot below klumi. That if you have silence after the granting of the money, that is meaningless. Kasha ba befum na'aro. Mishmei de Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Yeshua. They challenged this understanding of Rova by Rav Huna, Brei Rav Yeshua from Pumnara. Midomi, the cases aren't similar. Hotam betorat pikadon, you have ninu nihala. When she originally got the coin, in the case that we're discussing here in the Tosefta, is a case where she was a shomeret. She had to watch this coin. That's how she received it. Savra isha dinalu umitvere. If I throw the coin back at him and say, no way, and it breaks, I'm going to be responsible for it. She feels that she's engaged in the responsibility for this item right now. And when he says, marry me with it, she doesn't take action to deny that and throw it back at him and say, no way, because she feels like she's responsible. And if she does that, she's going to have to pay for it. Over here, when he hands her the money as a kiddushin, if she doesn't want it, let her throw it back at him. She has no responsibility vis-a-vis this coin or this money that's being given to her. If she doesn't want to accept it, let her throw it back at him. The fact that she didn't throw it back at him and she's silent is the equivalent of acquiescence, even after the fact. Because here, there's no relationship of a responsibility. Parach Rav Achai, atakolu nishai dina gemire. What are you saying? All these women are bikiyim in halacha? So they know that in the case of when I'm a shomeret, I'm responsible for it, so I won't throw it back. But in the case where he gave it to me as kiddushin, I'm not responsible, so I will throw it back. They're going to be so discerning. They're going to be so knowledgeable. Hachanami savra. Ishadina lohu mitverei. She thinks in the case of kiddushin, he handed me the money. If I throw it back at him and something goes wrong, mitchayvina b'achritayu. Even though it's not true that she will not be responsible for it, that's the way she's thinking. She's thinking that if I throw this thing back at him and say, no way, I'm going to be responsible for whatever happens to the money. Therefore, she's silent and says, I don't really care about what he's saying. I'm just going to ignore him. So I'll ignore him. If I don't say yes, then it's not yes. So he says, even though you're right, halachically there's a difference here, the women are not aware of that halachic difference. And therefore, she doesn't throw it back in either case because she thinks that she's going to be responsible for it. So now that her silence is not necessarily acquiescence because she's afraid of causing loss here. Shalcha Rav Acha bar Rav l'kamei de Ravina, ki hai gav namai. So Rav Acha bar Rav asks Ravina, okay, what's the halacha in the end? What's the psak halacha here? Shalachlei anan lo shmi alan, ha de Ravuna brei de Rav Yeshua. We never heard of this criticism or this question of Ravuna brei de Rav Yeshua. Atun de shmilachu choshula. You guys that did hear about it, you have to worry about it. So he says, we hold like that differentiation that was made by Rava's Shita, where Rav Shita says, Matshtikut al-Acha Matamaot is meaningless, so we don't worry about it. So that's what we say, no problems, nothing doing here. On the other hand, you guys who heard this question of Ahuna Breda Rav Shua, you have to be Choshesh for it. And that means now there's a possibility that there is a problem here and the cases are differentiated. That Shtikut al-Acha Matamaot makes a difference whether she's a Pikadon, it was a deposit originally, or whether it's just Kesef Kiddushin. And that distinction will cause you problems, and therefore you have to be Choshesh for that sheet of Ravuna Breda Rav Shua, because you heard of it. We didn't hear about it, so we don't worry about it. And the reason we're not choshesh for the sheet of Shmuel over here is because he changed his mind. Originally he gave the mat, and then he gave the money. So when he switched his mind from the mat to the money, it shows that he never intended the kiddushin to be done with the mat. If he had done it with the mat, we'd be choshesh for Shmuel, that even Pochem, Yishav, and Pruta were choshesh. But here, since he changed it from the mat to the money, it shows that he clearly had no intent of using the mat for kiddushin, so it doesn't matter that it was worth less than the shevaputa now. It could be worth the shevaputa somewhere else. Because now he focused on the maot, and the only question here is, do those monies that he focused on, do they work when it's after the fact? Okay, we're going to stop here. 15 lines down on Yud Gimel, Amud Aleph.